Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Hospital ethics committees have been around for some time. In Kansas City, these committees began in the mid-1980s. The Center for Practical Bioethics, at that time the Midwest Bioethics Center, formed and trained many of these committees. Sister Rosemary Flanagan was there as this process evolved. Today, she is a program associate at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Rosemary, hospital ethics committees were formed in part to do ethics. What did that mean to you and the center as these committees were formed in the 1980s?
Oh, very interesting question. I think that hospitals always thought that they were doing ethics. I think as technology increased in its usage, patients and families and often providers realized that they were going to that they were facing issues the likes of which they hadn't faced before, and that they needed help. So the ethics committee movement really began and picked up steam in the 70s and 80s, and especially in Kansas City in the 80s. When Myra Christopher was our first CEO of Midwest Bioethics Center, as a volunteer, incidentally, she said that she was told to help people in the Kansas City area face and resolve the ethical dimensions in healthcare. And she said, I looked for a door to get into hospitals, and the door that was most frequently opened was the door of an ethics committee if it was already established. And then by establishing ethics committees from then on out, then of course we got a big boost when in the young 90s, JCHO said, now, if you want to be accredited by our association, we want you to have an ethics mechanism. And so ethics committees got a big boost.
Now, doing ethics as opposed to, I guess, not doing ethics?
What's the difference? I think it was always doing ethics, but you do ethics in different ways. And I think that any good hospital that was worth its salt had been doing ethics since its foundation. What we stress in the ethics committee movement is that we do ethics reflectively. We know what we're doing when we do ethics. And therefore, the whole type of argumentation, it gets a boost from the meaning of what you do when you do ethics.
Now, how did doctors, nurses, other medical professionals at that time react to this idea doing ethics?
Well, usually with resistance in the beginning.
Oh, really?
Because they had thought, which was true, they had failed to distinguish morals from ethics. And they knew they were good doctors and nurses, and they didn't like a group coming in and insinuating, if we didn't say it, that they had been missing the boat all these years. Now, what we tried to do in the ethics committee movement when we asked doctors and nurses to join with us is to add that dimension of the movement from being moral, knowing what's right and wrong, which of course was emphasized in their whole professional training, to justifying the decisions they make out of that morality by using ethical language.
Now, eventually, hospital ethics committees began dealing with issues that were bigger than their individual committees or institution, and the Kansas City Regional Hospital Ethics Committee Consortium was formed to address that. Mm-hmm. How did this represent a step forward in the work of ethics committees?
True. And the marvelous thing is that when you do ethics, the strength of the reflection depends largely on how deeply the content is shared by different spokespeople. Now let me try to illustrate that. In hospitals, if decisions were made only by healthcare professionals, let's say that they knew what was best for the patient, so they didn't include patients or families. Well, to justify that kind of, and it would be, I presume, very moral behavior, but to justify that in this day and age would be impossible. So as you get more people into the reflective process, I think that you have a better handle on the kind of argument that makes up the doing of ethics, because you have people from different perspectives addressing that same issue and challenging your own evaluation of that issue from their different perspectives, which then you must include in the argument.
Now, Ethics Committee Consortium, it took on a lot of different kinds of issues.
One of the
first issues to develop a guideline around was the issue of medical professionals treating patients with HIV virus.
That was such a powerful one for this fledgling group. Now, remember, many of those ethics committees in our Kansas City Consortium were brand new, and they were so intent upon self-education so that they would be good ethics committees. And they were doing either real case consult or pretend case consult in their own little institution, coming together to face a situation that was wider than any of those individual institutions. When we asked how ought healthcare professionals treat patients with HIV, and the question was being asked across the United States, it wasn't just being asked in Kansas City, and I can remember the TV news program in which I saw a doctor treating a patient who was infected with HIV, where the doctor looked as if he or she, I can't remember the sex, was walking on the moon, because they were so garbed against infection. And so we were asking, is this what medicine has become? The wonderful thing about the kind of discussion that went on there, and I'm sure there was terrible fear in the providers' community, is that we realized that if we used universal precautions for every patient, we would not end up discriminating against HIV patients and our providers, and everybody else in the hospital would be safe.
So guidelines were developed from that addressed it in that fashion.
That's right. And it wasn't the fact that we were so brilliant in Kansas City, although we were on the edge, but it was also going on throughout the country. And I think we had an important role to play in the federal guidelines for universal precautions.
Has the nature of issues brought before hospital ethics committees changed over the years, or have you had the same basic kind of problem or issue that come before ethics committees now?
That's a very, very interesting question, Laurel, because when I think back on the kinds of – we were in the consortium, we were addressing issues that affected every hospital in our greater Kansas City region. And, you know, how do you care for the difficult patient? How do you form and educate a good ethics committees? How do you—we were just addressing the big guideline questions. Well, once they're addressed and once policies are in place about them, then what is happening in the individual ethics committees is more and more a focus back out of the background of all those good policies of individual cases. And so frequently withholding, withdrawing food and or life-sustaining treatment, for example. Those issues are going on right now, although each of the hospitals has a policy that reflects the consortium's a study of that issue. I think, though, looking back on things as they go now, because of the complexity that's arising in healthcare delivery, everything that I read tells me that ethics committees, for the most part, are dealing more and more with end-of-life care. Now, I regret that, not because I don't think end-of-life care isn't something to address, but there are so many other issues that are going on in healthcare. And when you hear reports from different ethics committees of their kinds and numbers of case consults, and that so many of them are end of life, you wonder, are we taking an easy road out? Are we ceasing to be as inventive as we were in the beginning to make an area for us and to make it something that we could contribute to?
Now, today, some 25 years later, we see some questioning of the role of hospital ethics committees, their makeup, their training, and such. Now, how do you view that discussion?
No entity, especially a 25-year-old entity, ought to grow without somebody watching it and seeing whether or not it's growing tall and straight or bent over and all disabled. So I'm okay with the fact that even nationwide, the movement of bioethics committees is being questioned and what they're doing. Think that only 12 years ago, JCHO, after giving us a boost forward, even called us in the bioethics committee movement to take on another whole chunk of issues that we formed under what we call organizational ethics. I think that we in the ethics committee movement have never felt comfortable with our outreach into organizational ethics. But I still think that even though we who are clinically based, who deal much more with the individual patient in the bed and his or her family and his or her healthcare team, we could also be more curious about the wider picture and its ethical implications.
Advancing technology will remain with us.
And grow more and more complex, which means that the issues will be more complex.
And hospital ethics committee then will have a role in the future, perhaps even more important.
And more important if they take advantage of it. If they retreat in the face of this complexity, then the ethics committee movement will shrivel and die.
Sister Rosemary Flanagan is a program associate at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Thank you for visiting with us today.
Thank you, Laurel.
You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.